Thanks. I want to thank everybody from Fall for the book and George Mason, Penny and Bill and Sam in particular. I've been made to feel very welcome, and I'm incredibly honored and moved to be here, especially as somebody who barely graduated from college myself. I graduated a few years ago, officially. I didn't officially graduate when I was in school, but the Alumni Association at the University of Illinois tracked me down a couple years ago and said that they would finish my degree for me. And I was some credit short, and they did. And then I immediately started getting the alumni fundraising letters, of course. But this is the terrible thing. They were all addressed to my parents. So sad. To the parents of David Eggers, they would all be addressed. So there's a disadvantages to being found by your alma mater. How are we doing tonight? How are we doing? I hate being asked that as an audience member, you know, because you just want to sit. And I'm asking you to participate. How y'all doing? I'm going to talk about, I want to show some, this is only my second PowerPoint presentation I have ever done, but I want to talk a little bit about A26 Valencia that was mentioned earlier. When I was, I don't know, you probably know that writers have strange schedules sometimes and can sometimes waste a lot of time doing very little or trying to gestate some book purportedly in their head. And there are a lot of writing students here, right? MFA student, yeah? You know what I'm talking about? So when I was living in Brooklyn in the late 90s, I was one of these writers, and I was freelancing for magazines and doing a few other things, and trying to write my first book, and mostly just pretending to write it or stalling writing it. And I figured out that for every 1 hour I would write, there would be 8 to 9 hours. I mean, this is a real true ratio where I would be pretending to write or posing as a writer. But I lived in Brooklyn, and this is like the highest per capita number of writers probably anywhere in the country is in Brooklyn. And there were a lot of us out there at the time. And during the day, we had flexible hours, and we would walk around, and I used to walk around and pass all the public schools, and I used to think, you know, my sister was a teacher, a lot of my best friends were teachers, my mom was a teacher, and I was still in touch with most of my high school English teachers, and between talking to them and them saying, you know, they kept saying, you know, what they really needed to help their students, especially those that were falling behind or those for whom English was a second language, was more concentrated one-on-one attention. So they said they needed more bodies in the classroom, more people with some English expertise, and where would they get all these people? Dozens of, or hundreds of volunteers they needed. So around that time, I was living in Brooklyn, walking around, passing these schools, wanting to get involved, and there wasn't a conduit with which to do that. And so I started having this idea of maybe some sort of center where the writers and editors and journalists and freelancers and graduate students would gather and be available to the students in the neighborhood. It seemed like just a natural melding of those two communities. Real estate at the time, well, it's still in Brooklyn, was incredibly expensive, and we couldn't figure it out. We had a very small space. McSweeney's, our journal, had a very small office that was a few desks and a storefront. And in the storefront, we sold two main things. We sold amateur taxidermy supplies, for the, you know, the amateur taxidermist or the aspiring taxidermist. So if you had an animal that you had found that was dead or that you had slayed yourself and you wanted to preserve it for eternity, you could come in and we would give you the tools. We really did have all these tools. And so we sold those things, and then we also sold products for your show animals. So if you were, if you had a prized pig or a prized ferret, and you needed products to get them ready for an upcoming show, we would sell all those things. And this is true. Our most popular product was something called Ferret Sheen, which is like a gel-like substance that you comb through the hair of your ferret, and it makes the fur very lustrous, which is one of the first things that the judges look at. And we really had this store for many years, 3 or 4 years, and it didn't do very well at all. And we just didn't do the proper market research, I don't think, before we opened. We were the only ones in the neighborhood selling these things, But so when we moved back to San Francisco, we moved McSweeney's back, we were looking for a space that would be big enough to house this idea of like a tutoring center or a place where all these people could meet. And we found a place in the Mission District at 826 Valencia, and it used to be a weight room, and it's a really beat up old building, but it was enough space and the rent was affordable, so we decided to move in. And the landlord only had one condition, and he said, okay, you can do your nonprofit here, but the space is zoned for retail, has to be open to the street. I wanted you to be a restaurant. I wanted something that was sort of, you know, open to the public and people could walk in. So we had to come up with something to sell. And of course, the first thing we thought of was, well, we already have a foothold in the taxidermy supply business. And it turns out that where we were located, I don't know if you can see on the right side, is a store. We were located next to the only other place in San Francisco that already sold supplies to the amateur taxidermist. It's called Pax and Gate, and it's a real place. So we had to do some thinking and market research and stuff. So this time we hired all the professionals, and they informed us that the one thing that was missing in that neighborhood, in the city in general, but in that neighborhood in particular, was a conveniently located place to buy affordably priced pirate supplies. So that's what we do. We sell eye patches. We sell planks by the foot. We sell hooks and hook protectors for nighttime. We sell peg legs, handmade, size to fit. We sell lard, of course, millet for your parrot. We sell basically everything a working buccaneer would need. I'm going to show you some slides. This is the interior. The bookshelves were something I drew on a napkin, and a carpenter sort of made them work from there. On the left there, you see it's like a vat that the kids will come in, and they get to dig into the vat if they find a treasure that they like, which is like old coins and foreign coins and things like that. They have to barter or sing or tell a story or draw a picture to get to keep it. So this is all, every one of those drawers opens up, it's all, you know, products. We outfit a lot of the local. It used to be, it started out as for the trade only. Like you had to have your union card when you came in. But then we opened it up to the public and anybody can come in. But you find a lot of people that will come in and get all their outfitting done. The striped socks and puffy shirts and that kind of thing. It's true. Anyone been there? Okay, some of you guys. It's a darker picture of this. It's a little. Is there any way to dim any of those lights? I don't know if you guys can see it pretty. This is replacement eyeballs. I don't know if you can see it, but we have replacement because, again, sometimes you're just at work with the hook or, you know, whatever it is, or sometimes it's intentional. So we have replacement eyeballs, and those are little guidebooks to using your replacement eyeball. There they are. You know, you can order these in any color or style. There's a place in Germany, a wholesaler, that will, any animal you want, too. If you wanted, like, a ferret eyeball, you can get it. Those are the eye patches. On the left, you can't really see them, but those are just the standard issue black ones. And then on the right are for, you know, special occasions or stepping out at night, that kind of thing. Everywhere are these signs, you know, practical joking with pirates, you know. That's harder. So here you see the store manager, Ana Ura, getting mopped. So all throughout are all these sort of lo-fi little things to entertain the kids. And this is where I just had this idea, like, you know, Captain Kangaroo, you've probably seen this show, maybe a few of you. It was just you periodically, the guests would get like 1,000 ping pong balls dropped on their head. So I just thought, well, who doesn't like having things dropped on their head? So we decided ping pong balls would be too complicated to clean up, and we would just do mop heads. So if you're positioned in the wrong place or the right place of the store, we can pull a rope behind the counter, and this box will open, and 8 mop heads will drop on your head. So we sort of, when kids come in with their parents, we whisper, we get them over there, and we tell them what's up, and then they position their mom or dad underneath, and then they get mopped, which is a weird sensation. Like, it doesn't happen every day. So there's a lot of screaming that happens in the store. That's our fish theater, 3 seats, and it just has, it's a little enclosure, it's a saltwater tank. And so right behind the center is the, right behind the storefront is this, is our tutoring center. And that's, just a bunch of desks, chairs, and tutors. And so every day, anywhere between 40 to 60 kids from the neighborhood will come in for after-school tutoring. And it's, it's jammed every day. We started, when we opened, there were about maybe 15 of us that would rotate as tutors after school. And we would sit. We had a sandwich board out front, and that just said "free tutoring after school. Come in if you need help in any English-related homework." And we sat back there, and we waited, and nobody came in for many, many weeks. And we realized, maybe too late, that there was like a trust gap there, because we were operating a tutoring center behind a pirate store. So the parents and the teachers had to sort of get hip to it, and pretty soon we built their trust, and so it started filling up. And so, but the strength of the tutoring base allowed us to do both the after-school tutoring, field trips every day of the week where students come in and collectively write a book and publish it, and we bind it, and they all leave with their own copy of it. They all have... they get to finish it and illustrate the cover, and then we do a little author photo on the back, and then they even do little blurbs. Like, one of the fifth graders decided to put a blurb on the back of his book where it said, like, "This is the best book ever, Tony Hawk," So now, like, they all do that. And we started with, maybe 30 tutors, and then it was 200 in a few months. We now have 1,100 volunteer tutors. So we can send them into schools all over the city, too. So a teacher will say, "I need 12 tutors for the next 5 Sundays because we're working on our college essays," and then we can just sort of put that out on the wire, and those tutors can come in directly from their home or their job and work with the students one-on-one under the teacher's guidance. But the weird thing is that these storefronts became part of it, because the weirdest thing is that they actually make money. I don't know if it's a comment on San Francisco or what, but this one actually pays the rent on the building, which is weird, So when I had a lot of friends that were still in Brooklyn, and the guys that used to run the store in Brooklyn wanted to open an A26 there, and they went with the same idea. They thought, well, let's have a storefront, because the last thing it does is, it's not a nonprofit that's sort of hidden away somewhere, like in the back of a building or on the 30th floor of a high rise or whatever it is. It's right at the storefront, right on the street level. You can see what's going on. And people just come in having no idea what the store is, shoppers, tourists, whatever, and they say, "What the hell is this?" And they do all the time, or angrier than that, because I think people want their retail outlets more linear, I think. So they come in and they say, "What's this?" and they figure it out, and they see the students being tutored right afterward, and then they might be more inclined to buy, a peg leg than they would otherwise, when they know that the proceeds are going to the nonprofit behind. And it's just sort of a gateway to the community. Everybody sees it. People interact. So when Brooklyn opened, they decided to do a different theme. So instead of pirate supplies, it was superhero supplies and crime-fighting supplies. So this is their store, which is on 5th Avenue and 5th Street in Park Slope, and we wanted the sign to look like one of those sort of, like a locksmith store, one of these places with like every single service they could possibly offer all in the sign, where you can't read it anyway, But we just like So it takes 10, 15 minutes to read everything there. And you have to be ideally standing in the middle of the road, which was a problem because the sign went up before the store opened and before the tutoring center opened. So people would just be standing out front all the time and dodging traffic. And there was like an 8-year-old that lived nearby that walked by when he just sort of got the concept, and he asked, you know, Scott, the manager, what it was about, and Scott explained it to him, and he's like, it's never going to work. And just kept walking. But it has worked. It's been open for years now. These are signs inside. The rooftop landing pad is closed to the public at this time. These are sign posters all over that offer sidekick placement services. When you go in, you have to register your superpower in a big ledger, you know. This is, it's meant to look at, can you guys see it pretty clearly? Is it a little dark? Yeah? Okay, I heard someone say it's fine. So it's meant to look kind of like a Costco, you know, with these big boxes and like everything by the, you know, sort of no frills. This is the, on the left here, you can see the villain containment unit, which is where kids come in and bring their parents in there and lock them in there. This is the where you buy your stuff. You have to put it in this little vault on the right, and it's actually a electric lift that goes up. You stick in the product you want to buy, you put it in there, close the vault, it goes up, and the counter is about 8 feet off the ground. So that person with a microphone asks you, you know, what you want, and then you have to vow, you have to recite the vow of heroism to buy anything, which is, it's kind of a burden, I think, you know, like, they don't do quite as well as the pirate store, and I really think that's part of it. These are some of the products. You can buy the secret identity kits, which will give you everything you need to be somebody else. Like, this is Sharon Boone, who's a marketing executive from Hoboken, New Jersey. And it gives you like the whole dossier on everything that you need. And you can buy a whole kit, like her desk, you know, post-it notes and like doodads and knickknacks and stuff. But it gives you everything. Little clothing. These are all the supplies that you can buy. They make every single product, the guys in Brooklyn. They do, it's all original. This is the capery. So you go in, and if you need a new cape or you're sort of altering the cape that you do have, you can go up and you take three, you fit it, or we'll help you fit it, depending on if it's like a summer cape, you know, like a lighter material, like a rayon, or if you're like a winter superhero, you might use a plaid or flannel. And then you walk up the three steps, the three graded steps, and we turn on three industrial fans, and from below and the side and the top, and it gets the cape going. Because you got to see it in action, because otherwise you get out there and it starts bunching up or something. And so, and then here you see this is the shelving. The shelving, this whole wall moves. It's like a secret door, and then that leads to the tutoring center behind, which is really the nicest one that we have. They did a really nice job. This is, you can see there's five clocks throughout that show the time in all the different boroughs of Brooklyn, of New York. So this, everybody's been replicating this in each city. Like, there's always a local group that wants to start an A26. And I had a friend that used to run a different sort of school in Seattle, and she wanted to open an A26. She did so. And they have the Greenwood Space Travel Supply Company, same kind of theme. This is their opening night, opening day. It's a real equation done by a NASA scientist up there on the wall. This is one of their products, the Near Death Ray, and the slogan is, why kill when you can be stunning? And that's some of the kids, like, it's an old photo developing booth thing where you walk in and the door swings around like a half circle. And so we just, like, I was just showing, we just signed a lease like 2 days ago for a new space in LA. We've had a space in LA, but it's been as part of another nonprofit. So we haven't had a storefront there, but we've been open for 3 years down there. But this is going to be, this is on the east side in Echo Park on Sunset. And the theme there is time travel. So it's going to be like a duty-free 7-Eleven type of store for time travelers. So if you're like going from the future to the Middle Ages, you need a battle axe, that kind of thing. And this is the logo and the slogan. Isn't that good? They came up with that. I don't even know. I don't think you could grasp that. I don't think it like breaks down. So all the spaces, you know, there's after-school tutoring, there's evening workshops taught by professionals in whatever field, from radio production to poetry to haiku to screenplay writing to, writing a personal memoir, that kind of thing. And then, you know, we are sending in all these tutors into the schools, and then we publish books by students, too, to sort of honor and dignify and make permanent their work. There's a bunch of their books. We do at least 3 paperbacks a year. But then when they're done with their homework or done with this work, a lot of the students just use these places as safe havens where they can be creative and they can walk through the storefront. They know it's different from school. It's still kind of school, but it's different. And so we end up with a lot of students that are there every day for years. And there's a kid named Alex that goes to the Brooklyn space every day. And he finished, he started when he was 7, and he's like 8 and a half, 9 now. And so he finishes his homework in 45 minutes or something. It's not a whole lot of homework. And when he's done, he does these collages. And so I'm going to show some of these because it just, I think the kid's a genius. But so here we go. I'm going to read the caption because it can't really be read. So, Jessica Simpson. Jessica Simpson went to the Jeeks for taking Hillary Duff's song, "The Beat of My Heart." What is the Jeeks? A place where police make people eat chocolate cake with their hands. Did you know Tom Cruise plays electric guitar so hard it could break your eardrum for a week? He's pretty good. He sings Beatles songs. He sings in Hollywood train stations. They're pretty though, right? These collages. This April, King Kong just grew bunny ears. So if you have a baby, tell him that's King Kong, not the Easter Bunny. Wendy's triple burgers are the most great. They're the best burgers in Brooklyn, and their cheese is being doubled. I'm fixing a little bit of the grammar here and there. Did you know that now farmers are making chicks push wheelbarrows around the farm because they're too darn lazy to do it themselves? Now robots are our jazz people, but they stink. So don't go to a jazz restaurant for a nice dinner, even if it has the best food in the world. Don't go. Coming in July, the Monkey Picker 2000 is the world's top robot monkey who picks your nose for you. But if you don't give him a plastic banana, you don't want to know. And this is the last one. A ginger man married a peanut. Can you imagine what their children would look like? This kid's great. Well, that's my A26 spiel. I want to say that whether or not you ever, it looks like we have mostly students, so if you're, wherever you go after this, if there isn't an A26 in your city, there's a lot of programs like it around, obviously. I cannot overestimate or overstate the effect that even an hour one-on-one will have on a student with the education that you have here and the expertise that you have. If you can just go shoulder to shoulder, one-on-one with a student and explain things to them and try it one way and then try it another way and really be sort of, a lot of these students have never had that kind of like 3 hours one-on-one kind of attention, and it can make the world of difference. So wherever you are, and even if you have just a little bit of time, you know, 1 hour a month, 2 hours a month, 3 hours every, you know, 3 months or whatever. It's completely life-changing, not only for them, but for you. Because the tightening of the community that happens, you get to meet these students, they get to meet you, you understand each other far better, understand how, you know, maybe what's going on in their school, what, you know, what they're up against, what problems, you know, what things they do or don't understand in their work, how incredibly great these students are. And you understand also, if you get a chance to ever work in the public schools, in one of these programs, you understand what the teachers are up against and how hard they're trying and how creative and inspired and hardworking they are. And so it has so many byproducts, so many different effects, and it's people like yourselves that are desperately needed in these schools. So please, if you see one of these programs wherever you are, join up, give it a shot. You will not regret it. Does that make sense? There's like light on just you two guys. I feel bad.